This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, Baruchim Avon, welcome everyone. We continue with our Shiur on Sefer Vayikra. Hope everybody had an enjoyable Yom Tov. And Bez Hashem, hopefully by next week, all the people who went to Orlando will be back from then. Because I don't think there are any flights, but they're walking up north, and hopefully by next week they'll have returned. Okay, so the Shiur on Sefer Vayikra are sponsored by our dear friends, Dr. Zakheim, Umeshpachta, Leila Nishmas, Rav Shlomo Eliezer ben Rav Yaakov Zakheim, and Leila Nishmas, Dr. Zakheim's mother, Rivka Bas Tuvia Halevi. May their neshamais have an aliyah, began Eden, Tehei Menuchasam, Shvi Melitza Yisham for their whole family, Adbi Askoel Tzedek. Tonight's shir is sponsored by my dear friend, Rav Ephraim Pinsauer, on the occasion of the yahrzeit of his father, Yisrael Chaim ben Ephraim. On this occasion, may Rav Ephraim's father's neshama have an aliyah, began Eden, Tehei Menuchasai, and be a male tzioshir for his whole family, Adbi Askoel Tzedek. Okay, some public service announcements. Really very uncomfortable doing this. Many of you know already, Be'ez Hashem, we're looking to build a Torah center here in Cedarhurst, and we're going to be having a campaign around Lag BaOmer time. But if anybody wants to be from the Asara Rishonim and or even obviate the need to have a campaign, that we would very much welcome that. So if anybody listening wants to be Mishtatef, be from the Asara Rishonim, Be'ez Hashem, the Torah Center will have a very far reach, and you can have a chilek in Harbatzas Torah, whatever you could do to help us, Tavay Aleichem Bracha. Okay, Parshas Achrei Mois. Here's a disclaimer. Tonight's shir is a very dangerous shir. It's a very dangerous shir. And if you don't understand it, just forget the whole shir and wait till next week. If you can't wrap your head around it, just make believe it never happened. If you don't really understand it, don't say it over at the Shabbos table. Take out some parsha sheet and say over some cheesy Dvar Torah, you know, that makes everybody feel good. But I believe that there's a certain very important truth that we're going to study tonight that we could use emphasis on in our times. Tonight we're going to talk about a very big temptation that I know many of you feel sometimes, and we're going to try to overcome it, and that is not to sacrifice your children to Moloch. I know it's a very big problem in our generation. People taking their children, throwing them into the conflagration of Moloch, especially, you know, on a long Yom Tov, and the kids are misbehaving, and you have that, you know, all of a sudden, you never thought of it before, but, you know, the Yetzer says, why don't you just offer them? No, I'm just joking. But nevertheless, I don't think most people have this taiva to offer their children to Moloch. But first, we're going to identify what exactly is this idol worship. The pasuk says, "Umizaracha lo yisitein lehaavir laMoloch." From your children, do not give to pass on to Moloch. So, what's the solution of lehaavir? V'lo yisachal el Hashem Elokecha ani Hashem. Do not desecrate the name of your God. I am Hashem. So Rashi says Moloch is a form of Avodah Zarah. The name of Avodah Zarah is Moloch. And the way you worship it is you give your children over to the priests. And they make two fires. And Rashi learns you just pass the kid through the fire. So Rashi says two things. You hand the kid over to the priest. The priest passes the kid between the fire. So what happens to the kid? Happens to the kid, you thought you're going to take care of the issue. No, the kid's coming home with you. Nothing happens to the kid. The kid is just walking through the fire. Loi sitain zuhi misirasi lakoyimim. Loi sitain is, you're not to give it to the kid to the priest. Lahavir lamoylech zuha avara sa'ish, to pass through the fire. In other words, you're only chayiv if A, you give the kid to the priest, B, the priest sends the kid through the fire. And Rashi reiterates his opinion, Masechta Sanhedrin Samach Dalet Amud Beis, where Rashi learns that nothing happens to the child in the worship of the Moloch. Rashi brings two opinions. Either there's a fire on both sides, and the priest brings the kid through the fire. Rashi says, the Gemara Sanhedrin Samach Gimel Amud Beis says, by Chizkiah, when he was passed through the fire, the mother smeared him with salamandra blood, which makes him impervious to the fire. So it sounds like, in fact, the kid does get burnt. So Rashi says, no, that was a different kind of idolatry. That was the idolatry of Safarium, and their taka, they do barbecue the kids, but Moilach is not a real barbecue. Moilach is just you pass through the fire. Or Rashi says another pshat, they make a pit, they make a fire in the pit, they jump over the fire, and nothing happens to the kid. There's no barbecue going on. That is the shita of Rashi. The Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Vav Halacha Gimel, concurs with Shitas Rashi. He says a few lines from the end. You're not burning the kid. Ella b'ha'avara bilvad. He's just passing through. That's the what's wrong with that? It's a worship of Avodah Zarah, yeah? Now, the Rambam disagrees with Rashi in the sense that Rashi says you give the kid to the priest and the priest takes the kid through the fire. And the Rambam learns you give the kid to the priest. Now the kid is the priest. The priest gives the kid back to the father and then the father brings the kid through the fire on behalf of the priest. In other words, everyone agrees you have to give the kid to the priest. Who's passing the kid through the fire? Rashi learns the priest. The Rambam says, I have to give it to the priest. The priest gives it back to dad. Okay, the Rambam in the Perash HaMishnayis says differently. The Rambam in the Perash HaMishnayis says, like Rashi, that you give the kid to the priest brings the kid through the fire. And therefore, either way, if a priest knocks on your door, you should not give the kid to the priest, even if whether the priest is going to put the kid through the fire or give it back to you. Either way, you should try to avoid either practice. In case you were wondering, in case you had the desire to do so. Comes the Ramban disagrees. The Ramban says, not like Rashi, and not like the Rambam, in the opinion of the Ramban, ha'avara means the kid gets passed through the fire. And the Ramban brings many proofs from various psukim and Tanakh that indicate that the kid is not surviving, because the psukim use a lashon of shchita, which implies taking the kid's life, and the kid being saraf, and the opinion of the Ramban is moilech is asur when the kid dies. That's shita of the Ramban. The Ramban says it's only if the father passes the kid through the fire and the kid, chas v'shalom, is burnt. I asked the Ramban, the Gemara has a drasha that it's the isser is on the father, but the one being passed through the fire is not punished. Right, the Gemara Darshan's only the father who passes the kid through the fire is punished, but the kid is not punished. Says Ramban, well, the kid's not punished. I thought the kid is being burnt in the fire. So why is it relevant whether the kid is punished or not? Why do we need a drasha that the kid is not punished if, according to my shita, the kid is being burnt? Says Ramban, because the way the kid is burnt by the fire is the father passes the kid through the fire many, many times, so the first time the kid is only getting a little bit burnt, and the next time a little bit better done, more well done, and the third time, you know, medium, and then more, and then until finally it's mamish, it's a full-fledged barbecue. But the Ramban says the first time the kid is not burnt completely, and at that point in time the father's already chayiv, and the kid is pater. And the Ramban brings various proofs that this is in fact what the Avodah Zarah of Moilech was. And then the Ramban asks, but in discussing other types of idolatry, like six lines from the end of the Ramban, by the Safruim, there it says they burnt the kid in the fire completely, which indicates only Safruim was Al Ho'esh, but the other Moilech was the kid was just passing through? No. Ramban says Moilech is also the kid is burnt. But Moilech, the kid is passing through, and in the course of passing through, the kid is burnt. Safruim, the kid remains on the fire until he becomes deshen, complete ashes. That's the shita of the Ramban. Okay? So therefore, now that we know the sugya, avoid either practice at all costs. The Sefer HaChinuch wants to know what exactly is this idolatry? So Sefer HaChinuch says this was very prevalent in the times of when the Torah was written. Many nations did this, and the Torah warns us against it. Why specifically this Avodah Zarah? According to Ramban, it's Pashat, because you're killing the kid. According to the Rambam, the Torah specifically warns against Moilech, because it was a big fad. So the Torah had to steer us away from it. So this is the topic you chose to speak about. What would you speak about, Parshas Acharei Mos? This is going to be great. Great subject. Here's the topic for tonight. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Darshans, what if somebody has 17 kids and he gives every last kid to Moilach? He's Pater. It says, Umi Zaracha, from your kids. You're only chayiv if you leave over some kids. It's a drasha. And the question is, says the Sefer HaChinuch, you would think it's much worse if you give all your kids to Malach. No, you give all your kids to Malach, you're off the hook, you're a good guy. If you give some of your kids to Malach, then you're chayiv misa, you're chayiv skila. Why? So the Sefer HaChinuch is troubled by this question. And the Sefer HaChinuch says that here, the bottom line is, when these crazy priests try to persuade people to offer their kids to Moilach, what was their pitch? Hey, take all your kids on a Chol HaMoed trip and give them to Moilach. Who's going to do that? But if the priest says, you want to have Hatzlacha in raising your kids? Give one kid to the gods, and in the Zechus that you give one kid to the gods, your mamish have you Yiddish and Nachas on the rest of the kids. The rest of the kids will be Mitzuyanim, they'll be Gagoinim, Gedoilim, Tzadikim. You have to give one. So nobody, the priest never had a sales pitch to somebody that they should give all their kids to the Moilach. The whole pitch was, give some of your kids and you'll be Matzliach with the rest of them. Because they knew they would never be successful in convincing someone to give all their kids. So therefore, the Torah needs to specifically warn against this deceit and this falsehood and this kind of idolatry. But the priest would never try to convince somebody to give all their kids. Nobody would ever fall for that. But the sales pitch was, give one so the rest would be successful. There's a very interesting sefer called Galilei Zahav that I saw yesterday in the sefer Oitzer Penine HaTaira. Now I had Oitzer Penine HaTaira on Bereshis and Shemois. And after looking through many, many Svarim, and Tuesday was ticking away, and I still had no idea what I was going to talk about on Wednesday night, I realized, I looked through many, many options. I even have some ideas. I could not develop them. So I called up the Svarim source. Do you have Oitzer Penine HaTaira and Vayikra? And Zundels didn't have it, and Judaica Plus didn't have it. So I called my friend Rabbi Mayor Bronstein, and he happened to have two. So I drove to Far Rockaway, and he gave me his second copy. And when I told him that I was speaking about this topic, he could not believe this is the topic that I chose. But in that sefer, it quotes the sefer Galilei Zahav. Galilei Zahav was written by Rav David Mashkovitz. And this sefer, interestingly, has a haskama from Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld and Rav Kook. So he had a haskama from both the full spectrum, the full gamut. And he asked this question, what is pshat in the Gemara, where if somebody offers all of their children to Moilach, they're pater, but if they give some of their kids to Moilach, then they're chayiv. And he says, a really unusual idea. And when I heard the idea, it jogged my memory that I heard this idea a couple times before in other contexts. And the idea is as follows. The most important quality in a person is that he should be genuine. Toichai kabaroi. And that his actions and his maisim and his activities should be because that's what he believes. Where he's not doing things to impress or to curry favor or to try to show that, yeah, I'm on your side, and then when he goes somewhere else, he does other things to show I'm with you. No. The most important quality is that a person should be toichai kabaroi. And the worst avir in the world is to be deceitful, and to be a hypocrite, and to be wishy-washy. At least it's better to have a backbone, better to be a Rasha, with a backbone than somebody who blows with the wind. What team do you go for? Well, it depends. Whichever team happens to be in the Super Bowl. Nah. Better to be a Met fan and never have any nachas ever in your whole life than to root for the team that happens to be in the World Series. Better to root for the Buffalo Bills than the team that... Don't be a fair weather fan. You have to have a shita, even if you're wrong. And even if it's you're a Rasha, better to be a Rasha than not to have any values. Better to have bad values than not to have any values. In a certain sense. Okay? Now, whatever sport analogies I gave, I don't know anything about sports. I asked somebody to brief me before. This way, I could relate to the people in the audience. No, I'm just joking. Okay. So, here it goes. And here's the example the Sefer Gilui Zohar gives. So you have Rivka Imenu, and she's not fertile. She can't have kids. And she waited 5 years, 10 years, and she called up all the organizations, a time, Bainei Oilam, nobody could help her, and she davens. And finally, she's pregnant. And she passes by the shul, and this kid is kicking to get out. And then she passes by the church, and someone's kicking to get out. And Rivka says, what do I need this for? Who needs to be pregnant? Better not to have any kids at all. I'd rather go my whole life being barren than... I don't understand. She waited her whole life to have kids. She's having a kid. And then finally she goes to the Navi, and the Navi says, don't worry, you're going to have two kids. One kid is going to be the Roish, the Nasi, the Mayeses Gedolei HaTorah. And the other kid is going to be a serial mass murderer. Oh, she says, Baruch Hashem, what Yiddish Anachas, this is great, this is wonderful. What did she think she was having? And how did the fact that they told her that she's having a serial killer, how did that assuage her anxiety? Says the Sefer Glilei Zahav. And later I saw that the Sefer Parperas HaTorah brings this from Rav Shalom Shvadran. And the Brisker Rav said, the Chassam Sofer says this. When I was in yeshiva, they used to say this from Navardik. She thought she was having a fair weather fan. She thought, what kind of kid was she having? A kid that when he hangs out with good people, he learns and he davens. And when he hangs out with bad people, he does the wrong thing. So what kind of guy is this? A guy with no backbone. So somebody like that has no hope. Somebody like that has no future because they have no values. They don't believe in anything. They just go with the flow when they're with good people. When they pass by a shul, they go to learn. When they pass by the movies, they go to the movies. Where it's spur of the moment. It's whimsical. So Rivka thought, forget it. This kid has no chance. This kid has no backbone. He's wishy-washy. So when they said, don't worry, you're going to have a God of Adar, great. You're going to have a serial killer, great. At least he believes in something. He believes in killing people. And one day someone's going to influence him and he could be a good person. But if someone doesn't believe in anything, they're hopeless. Now you see why it's a dangerous share, right? So says the Galilei Zav, that is what Rivka was worried about. She was worried the kid was a hafachfach. The kid was a politician. He just curried favor with anybody. He just went with whoever he happened to be next to.
The seal.
What?
The seal.
The seal? Right. Very good. Is that what we said? I don't remember so well. He's Ba'aretz Ubayam. So he's a Tameh, right? Here's a guy, he has 17 kids, he gives them all to Melech. Alright! It's not so bad. What do you mean? He's killing all his kids! No, he's a man of principle. He believes in Melech. He believes in the Avodah Zarah. He thinks that this Avodah Zarah is the source of salvation. He believes this is the source of Hatzlacha. He believes in Melech! And nobody's going to change his mind. He's stubborn like a mule. He's loyal to the Melech. Alright, he's not a great guy, but at least he's off the hook because he is a genuine person. He's genuinely rotten, but at least he's genuine. He's straight. He's toichai kabaroi. He does what he believes in. But a guy who gives some of his kids to Melech and the other kids are learning in Lakewood, so the guy doesn't believe in anything. Who does he believe in? Does he believe in God or does he believe in Avodah Zarah? He can't make up his mind. He's trying to please everyone. So when he goes here, he plays lip service to the Melech. And when he goes there, he plays lip service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That guy is Chayiv Skila. Why? Because worse than wickedness is hypocrisy. That's the approach of the Gli Lezahav. It's an interesting idea. Especially when you realize that the Briskarov says that's how the Chassam Sofer explained the rationale for why Rivka was so nervous when she passed by the house of Avodah Zarah. One of them was this kid was kicking to get out, and when she passed by the house of Tyra, the kid was kicking to get out. She thought the kid was mixed up. He has no values. He has no morals. He has no backbone. And that jogged my mind to a few other similarities. Now, they're not exactly parallel. It's not exactly the same as Rivka with Yaakov and Esav. It's not exactly the same as Melech. But I think if you open your mind a little bit, you'll see somewhat of a parallel. Here you have a guy, he walks into the shul, he says, Rabbi Yud, you okay, everything all right? Say, yeah, I'm all right. So what's that white spot? Oh, the white spot? I'm not sure. Did you go to a kohen recently? Nah, I have an appointment this afternoon. Okay, he goes to the kohen, he has a white spot. The kohen says, you have tzaras. The guy, we lock him up. The guy is covered head to toe with tzaras, except he has a little open, healthy flesh, he's tamei. Then another guy walks into shul, says, well, what's going on with you? You look white like a ghost. Nah, it's not tzaras. Wait, it's not tzaras. It looks exactly like the other. No, my whole body is covered with tzaras. A guy whose entire body is covered with tzaras, what's his din? He's tahar. The guy who's half tzaras, half not tzaras, he's okay. What's the pshat? So the Rama wrote a sefer on Mitzayras Kashaleg, but not her whole body. She had a nega, but if somebody his whole, yeah, we don't know. But if it says she had saras, that means she had the whatever would render her a mitzayra. Bottom line is the Rama says, what's the reason why someone who is totally covered with saras from head to toe is tahar, and someone who has a nega is tame? The Rama in the Sefer Taras Ha'Ola explains as follows. A very interesting pshat. He says tzaras was a external manifestation of the corruption and the improper attitudes and midos that lay dormant on the inside. So if somebody is covered from head to toe with tzaras, that meant they're rotten to the core. They have no redeeming qualities at all. Everything about them is bad. We don't have to make that person tummy. You know why? Because they have no redeeming qualities. Nobody's going to learn from them. Nobody's going to hang out with them. No one's going to associate with them. Nobody's going to think that there's something to emulate. However, someone who's only partially covered with tzaras, that means there's still some good qualities that the person has, so people who associate with them might say, oh, they're in general a good person, or they have this good quality, so I'll learn from them, and people are not going to know to stay away. So therefore, somebody who is somewhat covered with tzaras, we have to render them tamei so that other people stay away from them. But according to the way, the approach that we're developing over here, perhaps someone who is completely covered with tzaras, he's not as bad. Why? Because he's just rotten to the core. So he's genuinely bad. He's really genuinely bad. And someone who's genuinely bad is not so bad. Because he's bad, but he's genuine. He believes in Ra. So at least he believes in Ra. So we don't have to lock him up. But the guy who can't make up his mind, whether is he with God or is he not with God? You know, what is he? Yeah, I'm not sure. I have good days and bad days, good hours and bad hours. I don't know what I believe in. You know, where do we have such an idea? We have this explicitly in Navi, where Elio Anavi, on Mount Carmel, he had all these people who are on the fence. And Elio said once and for all, he said, I don't understand you guys. If you're with me, then be on my team. And if you're with Baal, go to Baal. And Mosai Atem Poischem Ashnei Seipim. How long are you going to straddle the fence? Think about it. Here I have a guy. It's like, imagine telling a guy, he sits, you know, he comes to shul at 10:30. He sits in between the entrance and the exit. He doesn't know if he wants to come in or not. So imagine you say, either come in or leave. What do you mean either leave? How can you tell somebody to leave? You can't tell someone to leave. You can tell someone to leave. Yeah. Because you can't sit in the threshold. You got to decide in life. Are you in or are you out? Better to be out than halfway in and halfway out. Either you're with God. Can you imagine Eliyahu HaNavi said, I don't want you to be partially with God. Either you're with God or you're with Avodah Zarah. So I mean, think about what Eliyahu HaNavi is saying. Eliyahu HaNavi is saying, don't straddle the fence. God would rather you be with Mr. Idol named Baal than be like, you know, hemming and hawing and wishy-washy and playing lip service to both. No problem. You'll be better. You have a better spot in Olam Haba if you just stick with the Baal. At least then you're a straightforward, honest guy. Now you see why this is a dangerous year. If you're not getting this, just make believe this never happened. Maybe that's the pshat in the tzaras, that someone who's sort of this way and that way, maybe it's a bigger corruption of the human personality not to have a value at all than to be, in other words, what would you say is worse? You know, what is it called? Someone who doesn't care if there's a God. What is that called? An agnostic? No, yes, something like that. So what's worse, an agnostic or an atheist? So of course, I mean, until the day I should say, of course, an atheist really doesn't believe in God. Yeah, but at least he has a shita. Now again, this is in a certain dimension. Don't like take this to the moon. Don't like, you know, obviously, you know, in many, many ways it's worse to be a Rasha than to be, you know, in between. At least someone's in between. He's in the game. He's in the fight. But there's a certain kernel of truth to this idea, okay? So don't, you know, take it with a certain grain of salt, but take it. There's a certain value of having a value, of not being just like, you know, mush, not being a marshmallow. You ready for this one? This is wild. Anyone get a new suit for Pesach? That nobody wants to admit. No. Some people get a new suit for Pesach. Anyone get a new suit for Pesach and check it for shatness? No. You know what shatness is? You know the ancient Hebrews have a practice that they don't wear wool and linen together. You ever hear that practice of the Hebraic nation? So the Torah says, still about shatness, tzaram pishtam yachtav. You can't wear wool and linen together. So Pashup Shah, it's a choik. Rashi always says shatness is a choik. Comes Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, he says, no, there's a very simple reason for shatness. There's a man by the name of Kayin. And his carbon was Zara Pishtan, linen, flax. Remember Kayin brought flax? What did Hevel bring? Mi b'chayre soinoi. Sheep. Wool. U'mechel v'hen. And God turned to Hevel. And to his carbon, says the Medrash, Rabbi Shubin Karcha Omer, number 13. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al yisorvu minchas kayin vehevel la'olam. Do not mix the offering of kayin and hevel ever. Don't mix kayin and hevel. Kayin is linen, hevel is wool. And kayin is the first murderer, so you don't want to mix kayin with hevel. So don't mix linen with wool. You know that reason? You're not to wear wool and linen together because linen is Kayin and wool is Hevel. You heard that before? Yeah. So Rav Avigdor Miller asked one simple question. Really? The reason we can't wear shatness is because Kayin is linen? So then you shouldn't be able to wear linen. Are you allowed to wear linen? Of course you're allowed to wear linen. Why somebody would wear linen? I don't know. Creases right away. But allowed to wear linen. So if the reason you're not to wear shatness is because you can't mix the murderer with the good guy, so then you shouldn't be able to wear linen at all. Says Rav Miller, no. There's a place for Cain in the world. Cain wasn't the best person in the world. He's the first murderer. But nobody's perfect. And he made a misstep. He had a reason for it. And even for people who are not worthy, there's a place for them in the world. And however, you can't mix them with that which is good. Linen is okay. Evil is okay. But evil can never be mixed with toiv. Toiv has to remain pure, has to remain pristine. Worse than evil is an admixture of good and evil. Because then the purity, then that which is good is no longer, then you have nothing good in this world. So Rav Miller says, in the Sefer, awake my glory. But whatever he was, Cain is the first to shed human blood. Therefore, though the less worthy have a place in the world and may be necessary for the world, yet we are admonished not to mingle with them. This is not merely because of fear of contagion, but the mere fact of mingling, even without further developments, immediately alters the character of the more virtuous and changes their status. We need the not-so-virtuous ones in this world. The nations of the world are valuable, but mingling with them is a tragedy for Israel. Alas, says Hashem, that's for my children's sins. I exiled them among the nations of the world. You know, the Netziv was the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin for 40 years. The Russian government came and said, Netziv, you have to have limude choyel in the yeshiva. For how long? 1 hour a day. The Netziv came along and he closed the yeshiva. For how long? Forever. The Volozhin yeshiva was closed. He told his son, no matter what, the yeshiva can only remain open if it only has limude kodesh. Maybe there is a time in life to learn limude chayil, but it cannot be mixed b'makoy mechad. That was the opinion of the Netziv. I'm not telling you my opinion, I'm not telling you anyone else's opinion, I'm telling you what the shita of the Netziv was, where he closed the Volozhin yeshiva. His opinion was that worse than ra, there's a place for ra, there's a place for choil. The Reb Chaim Berlin, the son of the Netziv, he said that his father told me that this idea is merumas in the Torah. It says, lahavdil bein ha-kodesh v'bein ha-choil. That from there we learn that when you have choil mixed with kodesh, not only is the choil not mekabel kedusha, but the kodesh is meskalkel. And therefore, it's kedai, better not to have any yeshiva at all than to have a mixture. I mean, that's, you know, it was the only yeshiva at the time. The Volozhin was the first yeshiva. Now apparently, you know, I don't know that that's the hashkafa today, but that's the idea. Again, you take it with a grain of salt. You have to know where it applies. But there's such an idea that you have to have a value. Here's something else that jogged my mind. Rav Asi is reminding me there's a Mishnah that talks about the Kelev Hayam, a seal. And it's Metame. And the Mishnah says Metame because it lives in the water and it lives on the dry land. Now, wait a second. Things that live on the dry land are not necessarily Metame. Things that live in the water are Metame. But it seems the Balei Musar explained that this seal is metame because it has no value. What is it? It could hang out in the dry land. It could hang out in the water. If it meets a water guy, it could hang out in the water with him. It could meet a land guy. It could hang out in the land. What am I? I'm nothing. I'm a politician. Today I'm a Democrat. Tomorrow I'm a Republican. Whoever is going to give me money, that's what I am. And that's worse. Better to be in a certain dimension. Better to be a Russia. Yeah. So finally, somebody got so aggravated with what I was saying, yeah?
In your opinion, maybe like the conservative movement, would you say that maybe it's perhaps better not to be Jewish at all or to be conservative?
Right. So let's say without mentioning any specific denomination, perhaps better not to observe Jewish law at all than to observe some kind of quasi-invented, concocted version of Judaism, you know?
Toivah v'sheretz
b'yada, yeah.
Would the Gemara agree with that? I mean, you know, unfortunately the Gemara wasn't, you know, written at that time, but would the Gemara...
It's a great debate, you know, because some would say, you know, what do? You tell, let's say you have a Jew. He doesn't live in an Orthodox neighborhood. He doesn't know Orthodoxy. He lives in an area where his affiliation is what we would consider not a genuine form of Jewish observance. And he wants to know, should I go to my temple on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur or should I stay home? So is it better to have some form of awareness of God and some form of recognition of the Day of Judgment? Or do we say that's not authentic, so, you know, just stay home? It's very difficult to know. You know, maybe if he belongs to some denomination, then maybe his children will have a fighting shot of one day learning about, you know, it's hard to know. But I'll just bring out a point. There's a point to be made that sometimes...
It's genuine to that person because he doesn't know better. The person who's brought up conservative doesn't understand.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people, you know, it's hard to know. The case could be made that they all know that it's not a genuine form of... There's a saying, you're allowed to drive, you're allowed to do this, you're allowed to do that, you're allowed to change, the laws change for the year, for the particular rabbi. Okay, one last analogy. Isn't it interesting? You have, we have four exiles, and the Medrash tells us, Bavel, Madai, Paras, Yavan, and Edom correspond to the four animals in the Torah that have one simen. So, Madai, Paras, Bavel, Paras, and Yavan, who were the empires that ruled over us in times of the first Beis HaMikdash, when we were Oyved Avodah Zarah, Gilei Rashi, Chasdamim, they chew their cud, so internally they're good, but externally they don't have split hooves, like the Jewish people who are externally evil, and internally they were okay. In times of the second Beis HaMikdash, we were ruled by Edom. Edom has split hooves, which indicates externally the Jews were learning Torah and doing chesed, but internally they were corrupt, they had sinas chinam. Isn't it interesting that the biggest enemies of the Jewish people are compared to the four animals that have one kosher simen? And what about, you know, all the other nations of the world? They're animals that have, they don't chew their cud, and they don't have split hooves. See, isn't it interesting that the biggest enemies of the Jews are compared to the animals that have, like, some kosher symbol? As if to say, you know, the nations of the world that are just tameh and have no kosher signs, they're not so bad. They never harmed us. They don't dominate us. They don't try to hurt us. They don't afflict us. Because at least they're just bad through and through. So they have that good quality that they're not pretenders. If you're going to be bad, but don't be a pretender. You know who the real enemies are? The pretenders. The pig who has split hooves. See, have split hooves. The ones that chew their cud. So basically, the lesson of this year is not to say, well, you know, I thought I would just do a little good things, but now forget it. Now I'm learning that just be a complete Russia, you know, this is the best year I ever heard. The point is, as I said, if you're not getting this year, just forget it ever happened. But the limud is that before a person could be from and observant, and a Yirei Shamayim, you first have to be a person, and a person is somebody who has loyalty to that which he believes in. and that his actions are actually an outgrowth of what he believes, and he's not just trying to curry favor with people or movements or places. A person's a genuine person, and he acts upon his beliefs. And now we're ready to train ourselves to have the proper beliefs. And therefore, somebody who offers all of his children to Moloch, in a certain sense, is not as bad as someone who gives some of them, as if to say he doesn't know who he believes in, he's just trying to curry favor with everyone. Marv Raboisai, we're off to a great start in after Pesach, and Bez Hashem, next week, Parshas Kedoshim. Wishing everyone Bracha V'Hatzlacha Kol Tov.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.